My name is Cynthia Wilson, and this message is for you. This podcast covers micromotivators to encourage you to act because small actions can make a big difference in your life. Welcome to episode 22. Today's message is monitor your health. I'm very excited to have a very special guest with me, Brandy Murphy, who is a health coach. So she's going to talk with us today about how you can monitor your health in different ways. So welcome, Brandy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're just going to dive right into it today. So what inspired you to become a health coach?
It started with my own health journey. I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer when I was 22 years old. And that's kind of an interesting story because I didn't have any symptoms at all. I was perfectly healthy. I just happened to have cancer. The way that we found the cancer was completely by accident. I didn't go to an oncologist. I didn't go seeking out thyroid issues. I just went to a doctor because I had a cold. And when I went to a new doctor and they felt, you know, when you go to a doctor and they kind of feel your tonsils and they feel your throat, she said, oh, you have some lumps in your throat. Maybe we should get looked at. And that's how it started. So I started down this journey from the time that she found the lumps in my throat to me having my thyroid removed was only 6 days, because when they did the biopsy, they found that it was a pretty aggressive form of cancer that was spreading quickly, and it had already spread to my lymph nodes. It was pretty rare for somebody my age to be diagnosed with that type of cancer. So we had a complete thyroidectomy and then radiation treatment after that, radioiodine treatment. And I went from being perfectly healthy with cancer, as odd as that sounds, to feeling sick all the time. And this was a 6-year journey of me trying to figure out, how can I regain my health after cancer treatment? And most doctors didn't know what to do with me. I kind of went through the typical medical system where when I would get a new symptom, they'd send me to a new specialist. So when I started with headaches, they started sending me to a neurologist. When I started with new allergies, they started sending me to an allergist. When I started having joint pain, they sent me to a rheumatologist. But none of those doctors or health professionals were communicating with each other. And long story short, 6 years into that journey, I'm seeing 15 different specialists and on 14 different medications that I was told I'd have to take for the rest of my life. And yet I had no quality of life. I still felt sick every day. In fact, my breaking point was about 6 years into the journey, I had started a new medication. I was working as a middle school teacher at the time, teaching science in the chemistry lab with open flames and Bunsen burners, and I passed out cold. And that was my legitimate wake-up call. Like, really, they had to wake me up with smelling salts, and I had a wake-up call moment that I had to do something different. So that's when I started seeking alternative treatments and looking outside of traditional medicine. I started going and getting acupuncture and chiropractic and massage and looking at nutrition and supplementation. And I really had to go through this process of trial and error to figure out what worked for me. And it really came down to nutrition was the cornerstone. Yet of all the specialists I went to, not one of them talked to me about what I was eating. Not one of them talked to me about my diet. Not one of them talked to me about how I was handling stress. And so I went through this period of being angry. Like, why aren't they talking to me about this? And when I'm making changes, they're telling me that's not going to make a difference. But when I started making the changes I made, within 6 months, I started feeling better and was able to get off of many of the medications that I was on. And now 25 years later, I am only on one medication, and that is a thyroid medication that I'll have to take for the rest of my life. So it was through that journey where I started to experience what many people experience, and that is the frustration of the traditional system not working for them, of people not looking at the root cause and how all of the individual symptoms are really connected, because there are no fences in the body. If we have inflammation, it's going to impact multiple symptoms or multiple systems, but traditional medicine breaks us into these silos. And if you have inflammation here, you see this specialist. If you have inflammation there, you see that specialist. And really, my whole problem came down to managing inflammation. And when I could do that, I restored my health.
Wow, that's quite a journey.
It
Oh,
was.
goodness.
It was. And now I feel honored and blessed that I went through it, because without going through that journey, I wouldn't have been able to help as many people as I do today. And I've been in the health coaching space now for over 20 years. And in addition to working with individual clients, I teach physicians how to look for root cause, and I teach them how to implement lifestyle modifications into their treatment protocols. So when I'm working with a traditionally trained doctor, I get them to ask their patient, what are you eating? And how can we adjust your diet? And how can we make sure that you are managing your stress and getting enough sleep and getting the right type of movement for your body and dealing with your mental emotional health? Because whenever there's a physical challenge going on, there's always some sort of mental or emotional component to it. But many of the doctors in traditional medicine weren't trained to look for that. So I teach them how to do that. And that's been super rewarding, because as an individual health coach, I can only help so many people. But if I can train practitioners and physicians, that creates this ripple effect through communities, because they have access to so many more people that are looking for wellness options.
That's awesome. I remember having a conversation once with somebody who was going into the field and saying that really doctors don't get enough information during their studies about nutrition at all.
They don't. In fact, it's only since 2019 that some major medical universities started adding nutrition as a core course for their undergrad students or their medical students. Prior to 2019, it was only an elective that they could seek out if they wanted to, but their main biochemistry was really in undergrad biochemistry class, and they didn't really go into it in their medical school unless that was their specialty.
I'm glad to see that there's starting to be some changes in that because we certainly need a more holistic approach to wellness.
Completely agree.
So, what's one myth about wellness that you constantly encounter, and how do you debunk it?
There's a couple of them that are all tied to the same myth, and that is that your symptoms tell the whole story, right? Your symptoms give you signals, but oftentimes when we look at those symptoms, as I was just sharing, we're looking at them in silos and we're looking at them in a snapshot in time. For example, we're talking today about monitoring your health with data. And to most people, that means getting blood work done. But we tend to only get blood work done maybe every 6 months or once a year. And that is a very tiny sliver in time in our lives. And our blood work can change from day to day based on what we ate the day before, based on if we're a woman, where we are in our menstrual cycle. Are we still cycling? Are we perimenopausal? Are we menopausal? What was our stress level like at the time that the blood was drawn? There's so many factors that influence blood work that many people don't realize how transient it is, and how your nutritional status can impact it, your stress levels can impact it, your hydration can impact it, the way that the blood was drawn can impact it. I remember when I first started getting blood work done, having thyroid issues, I have to get it taken every 3 to 6 months. And they used to use a tourniquet. Right. And now they don't use a tourniquet anymore, because they're finding, they actually did studies that found when they use the tourniquet and it creates stress on the body, it can actually impact the outcome of the blood test. But we put so much weight on people's health from that little tiny snapshot that I think it's really important for people to understand there's a lot more data that they can collect that can give a better picture overall. So that's the biggest myth. The other one is that your blood work defines your health, right? Because it really doesn't. It's that snapshot in time, but it can change so dramatically that we need to pay attention to that.
Thank you very much for that information. We were talking a little bit about monitoring just now, and I do think that's important. So, in one of your recent Facebook posts, you recommended periodically wearing a glucose monitor, even if you're not diabetic. Can you talk about why?
Yes. So it goes into what we were just talking about. Your blood work can change, your blood glucose levels, your insulin levels can change so much throughout the day that wearing a continuous blood glucose monitor just gives you such an insider view of what's going on in your body. I encourage all of my health coaching clients to wear one for a minimum of 2 weeks, but ideally at least 2 months. And the reason why I say 2 months is because, again, depending on where a woman is in particular in her cycle, if she is in the luteal phase or the follicular phase, that can impact her insulin resistance or her insulin sensitivity. At different times of the month, we respond differently to sugar. And also taking into consideration the stress levels that change throughout the month, we can have a blood sugar response due to stress, even when we're eating low glycemic impact meals. If we're under a lot of stress, we can become more reactive and have a wider fluctuation in our blood glucose monitor. So I did this for myself, I'm going to say 5 years ago was the very first time that I wore a continuous blood glucose monitor. And it was fascinating to me because I've taught low glycemic impact eating for over 20 years. And I understood in theory, right, what should cause blood sugars to stay stable, what should cause blood sugars to spike, and what should cause blood sugars to drop low. However, everyone responds to different foods differently. And so there's a big difference between theory and reality when individual genes come into play and individual lifestyle comes into play. So the very first time that I did this 5 years ago, I was quite shocked to see that even 2 bites of rice would spike me pretty high, even when I paired it with a high fat meal or a high protein meal or a high fiber meal. And fat and fiber should blunt the glycemic impact when you eat something that's high GI like rice. But in some people, if they're a little sensitive to that particular food, it doesn't always work that way. So I learned back then, rice was not my friend, right? But when I talk about using it periodically, as I entered, I'm 50 years old, as I started entering perimenopause, those same foods that impacted me negatively before don't impact me the same way today, which is really fascinating.
That is.
Or if you're under a lot of stress, a food that typically doesn't impact you and make you spike could make you spike higher, or things that you're not aware of, like a cold medication. A lot of cold medication has the ability to increase your blood sugars, or certain headache medications or pain medications can cause it to go up. So I think it's really important for people to see specifically what foods they eat, how they impact them, and how their blood sugars change throughout the month. Where this is really fascinating, especially being someone who has taught low glycemic impact eating for 20 years, is when a woman or even males are struggling to lose weight, the generic response is almost always you need to cut your carbs, right? And so there are a lot of people out there that are restricting their carbohydrate intake or monitoring their carb intake and only eating low GI foods. And as their seasons change in their body, they may be doing that needlessly. I'll give you my personal example of that. Just this past year, even though I've worn a CGM for 4 years in a row for at least 3 months at a time, this particular year, as I'm changing in my hormone cycles and entering further into perimenopause, I started finding that I was keeping my blood sugars too low. So the reason why I was struggling with losing a couple of pounds isn't because I was eating too much carbohydrates or too much sugar, it's because I wasn't eating enough. And when I wasn't eating enough, that was putting stress on my liver. And what would that look like to me? I'd wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and not be able to go back to sleep and wake up with night sweats, which is part of a cortisol response. My body would wake me up to say, oh, we need to do something to get your blood sugars up because they're dropping too low. So now this year is the first time, 5 years into this, that wearing the CGM, I have nightly drops that put me a little bit too low. What's fascinating about that, my blood work didn't show it, right? So just getting my blood work done, my blood sugars look totally fine. If I wasn't wearing the continuous blood glucose monitor, I would never know that I was dropping down so low at night, which then led me down the path of I was having a dysregulated cortisol response, and now I have to focus on helping to balance out that cortisol response. Then that ties in to the thyroid level too. And here's something interesting. being someone that has been on thyroid medication for over 30 years, for the last 5 years, it's been difficult to manage, more difficult than in the past. And my doctor keeps wanting to increase my dose because what they would say is, oh, you have good circulating thyroid hormone, but the uptake isn't good. It's not getting into the tissues where it needs to be utilized. So we're going to increase your dose. It wasn't until I put the CGM data together with my sleep data. I also wear an Oura ring, so I track my sleep data at night. And when I started seeing that I was waking up at the exact same time as part of that cortisol response, and then looking at the blood sugar drops that were happening at the exact same time, that we were able to pinpoint, wait a minute, the T3 is too high in your thyroid medication, and that's what's triggering the stress on the liver, and that's what's triggering the cortisol response. So, you know what the actual remedy for that for me was? Eat a bedtime snack that has fat, protein, and sugar. Something as simple as a yogurt with honey and berries. And if I ate a high protein, like Greek yogurt with honey and berries right before bed, all of a sudden the low overnight drops stopped. The waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning stopped. And within 3 weeks of doing that, I was able to decrease my thyroid hormone. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it really is when you put all that together. I actually did get a glucose monitor and I did it for 2 weeks after I saw your
Awesome.
post.
Awesome.
I'm still learning a lot about it because I don't have all that health knowledge of everything, but wanted to see if there was any concern for me for any pre-diabetes or anything like that. And I'm happy to say that there wasn't.
Great.
But for me, I've been pretty much overweight my entire life, just generally speaking, which is sort of par for my course. I figured, okay, well, did this impact everything and how I go into other life? But I do try to stay active, and I was getting, 10,000 steps a day and stuff like that through the course of this. And I did see differences during my cycle of how
Yeah.
spikes went. So that's pretty fascinating too, to just to see like things went super high at certain times where
Yeah.
otherwise it did not.
Right.
And
And
so,
I mean, we could talk about that for hours because so many women struggle and no one is teaching them to eat differently at different phases of their cycle. We know that we crave different foods at different times of our cycle, but this can also help explain why. For example, when a woman has her period and is craving chocolate, that chocolate can have some of the, especially the darker chocolates, have magnesium in them that can help with the cortisol response. So it's your brain actually saying you there's a nutrient you're missing that I need you to get more of. And people aren't talking about that.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Thank you for sharing all of this information. Such a wealth of knowledge.
Oh, thank you.
So we've been moving along here, and there's differences in how people move through their health. So how would you support clients who hit a plateau or feel discouraged?
I would tell them, first of all, plateaus are normal. And I would also remind them that sometimes what they think is a plateau is not really a plateau. For example, if we're talking about weight loss, I don't consider a plateau until there has been no weight loss or no inch loss for a total of 4 weeks. Because sometimes when we're talking about weight loss, everybody's concerned about what's happening on the scale. But a lot of times there's behind the scenes hormonal changes and body composition changes that are taking place that may not reflect what you want it to reflect on the scale, even though you're moving in the right direction. As an example of that, somebody who is starting a new weight management program who hasn't exercised in years, and even if they just start walking, they're going to start building muscle mass that they didn't have before. And muscle weighs more than fat. So, what could be happening in those first couple of weeks of being on a new lifestyle program is they're gaining muscle and they're losing fat, but the number on the scale isn't going down as quickly as they'd like. So, they get discouraged. So, I ask them to look at other factors too. So, for example, how are your pants fitting? Are we taking waist to hip ratios or measuring, the number of inches of our waist? or circumference. Look for it that way. But also, healing, if we're not talking about weight loss, healing is not always linear. When I started looking at, the changes that I need to make in cortisol, I know that that's going to take several weeks, if not several months, to balance out that cortisol response. And while my cortisol is dysregulated, there's nothing I can do that will cause me to lose weight. So the first goal isn't weight loss, it is cortisol regulation. It is supporting the HPA axis and making sure that my adrenals are being fed the way that they need to be fed, and that my liver is being fed the way that it needs to be fed. And so the improvement markers are going to be more: am I sleeping better? Am I not having those 3 a.m. wake ups and the night sweats? Am I not having the blood glucose alarm wake me up with a low blood sugar alert? That's all progress, even though it might not be the progress that I started wanting as my primary goal.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What do you believe is the most underrated factor in achieving true wellness?
When I've started out talking about the fact that every physical ailment has an emotional symptom associated with it, or an emotional and mental health component to it, I think that is a big part that people miss. So, for example, the thyroid is connected to, from an energetic standpoint and an emotional standpoint, are we speaking our truth? Are we sharing our message that we were sent here to deliver? It's fascinating for me because I went to school to be a teacher, right? I have messages I want to share. And when I was diagnosed with cancer at 22 years old, it's interesting to me that it showed up in my throat, right at the area of the throat chakra, right? Which also is related to, are we speaking our truth? So I had to dig into that. When I was going through my cancer treatment, I had to look at, what is this part of my body trying to tell me? And it was also at a point in my life where there were some things going on that I was holding in, things that I was not happy about, that I was not sharing with others. So it's looking back now with 2020 hindsight, right? I
Sure.
realized there were some things that I wasn't saying that I needed to say. And a lot of work has been done by some pioneers like Dr. Bradley Nelson, who wrote the Emotion Code and the Body Code book, Louise Hay, who founded Hay House Publishing, right? She had a whole book called You Can Heal Your Life, where she has an A to Z list of all these different ailments and the underlying emotional belief that she connected to those ailments. And I think a lot of people could benefit from taking a look at, what are their physical symptoms trying to tell them on an emotional level? If we're having liver issues, oftentimes that's related to anger that's not being mentioned. If we're having stomach issues, sometimes it's related to not being able to digest something that's going on in our life, not just our food, but something that's happening in our life that we're having a hard time stomaching and we're not expressing that. So I really think it's important for people to explore the emotional energy behind their condition. And even if they're not ready to accept that maybe what they're experiencing mentally and emotionally could be contributing to health challenges, they could be keys to understanding where those health challenges are coming from, right? It's not always a causal relationship. Sometimes it's just a correlation. But taking a look at, how am I feeling right now, mentally and emotionally, and how can that tie into the part of my body that is struggling? Because if I can work on the energetic side and the emotional side, I can have improvement on the physical side too.
Definitely. I've seen that a lot. You and I have talked before a little bit about emotion code and body code work, and you can really see how a little thing can make a big difference
It
there.
can make a huge difference.
Just with, identifying something, there's so much that's amazing in that way. And then, there's other avenues too. Recently I've been reading a little bit about Qigong, and that has the same sort of aspects in there, where you're looking to identify, within each of the body parts and how things are connected. Same with acupuncture. I mean, it all goes down to the
We are energy
same
beings.
basics.
Yeah. We are energy beings, and there's a lot of different modalities that look at energy, and emotions are just energy in motions. That's where the word emotion comes from. But sometimes we get stuck on emotions, and then that energy gets stagnant. And if that energy is stagnant, whether it's acupuncture, like you were saying, that's designed to free up the stagnation of energy, or whether it is frequency medicine or sound healing, that's just designed to get the energy moving again. With the emotion code and body code, you use energy to move stagnant energy that's been trapped in the body. And so they've become a core component of what I do when I work with health coaching clients. And it ties back into our belief systems too, because we've been programmed to believe certain things about ourselves, including a picture of our health, right? And so a lot of times when people are diagnosed with a health condition, that diagnosis becomes a part of their identity. And they relate to it so much that they almost fight for it to stay a part of their identity, which can impede their healing. When I'm working with people, I want them to look at both the physical side and the energetic side. So I actually created a quiz that I use with my coaching clients. I call it my energetic archetype quiz, where it only takes about 3 to 5 minutes for people to take. And it just asks them questions about things that they like to do in their life. For example, are they a creative person? Are they a creator? Are they a healer? Do they like to help other people? Are they a protector? Are they always focusing their energy on protecting the people around them, sometimes at their own expense? Or are they a teacher? I kind of look through these different archetypes, and then those different archetypes are tied to sometimes blockages in different areas of healing or chakras or different emotions. So when we can identify their archetype, it gives them a path, at least a starting point to look at how can we connect what's going on in the body with what's going on in the emotions. And then we work through that in the coaching sessions.
That sounds fascinating. We will definitely put a link out to that quiz for people to take a look at if they're interested. Do you
Yeah.
want to give us the URL?
Sure. It's just quiz.energeneticcodes.com. So energenetic is ENERGENETICCODES.com. So quiz.energeneticcodes.com.
So I've got one last question for you then. When people think about looking holistically, like at the whole body, trying to figure out, well, what does a health coach do for me versus a psychologist or something like that? Can you define the difference between health coaching and therapy?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a place for both. A lot of times when somebody is going to a therapist, they're going to talk through a lot of the things that have happened to them in the past, which is great. Some people really need to go through that. They need to identify where some of their traumas came from and what they can do to process those traumas. But for some people, talking about the traumatic experience almost makes them relive the traumatic experience. It brings up the emotion, it brings up the energy. And if we can bring up that emotion and energy and release it, awesome. But if by talking about it, we're stewing and marinating in it and we're not releasing it, it can actually cause us to stay stuck in that area. So I think a lot of times people, when they go to therapy, they need to do both parts. They need to bring it up, and they need to release it or find a way to rewrite that story of their trauma. When we're talking about coaching, it's focusing not so much on the past, although the past may still come up, but it's focusing on where are we today and where do we want to get to in the future and how do we map out a path to get there. And we will still take into account some traumatic things that happened, but we're not going to dwell on them and relive them and rehash them to marinate in that energy. We're going to just identify the energy and release it without bringing up all of the emotion around it. I think that is important for people to realize that there's a place for both of them. And sometimes they need therapy and sometimes they need coaching. There are going to be times if somebody's really struggling mentally, a health coach is not going to be their best option. Sometimes they may need to have an underlying medical condition that requires medication. I'm not anti-medication. I think there's a time and place for it. I just think that sometimes people jump to that first when there's some other things they could have tried along the way with diet and nutrition and working on health goals to try to get it before they need to go on medication.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else that you want to just share generally for our listeners today?
I would just say, no matter where you are in your health journey right now, keep in mind that your body's not broken, right? It is beautifully designed, and it is designed to give you symptoms that lead you to learn something about it. And we just need to learn how to listen to it. Oftentimes, we're not taught how to listen to it, and we put all of the power in a third party, whether that be a blood test or whether that be data, even the good data like a CGM or an Oura Ring, right? But we need to know that they're all part of an overall conversation about what is our body trying to tell us. And our body can heal itself if you give it the right tools, if you provide it with the right nutrition, if you give it sleep and hydration, and you focus on a healthy mindset, we can heal ourselves. There's nothing that we can't make improvements in by changing our lifestyle and changing our life.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today, Brandy.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. This was fun.
Sure. And for all you out there, just remember, take some time to monitor your health, and remember that this message is for you.